The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I don't know if you saw in the celebrations at the end there, the Argentinians having that, you probably discussed it, but having that flag on the pitch about the, as they, the Malvinas or the Falklands, sorry, they call the Falklands the Malvinas. Yeah, well, there you go, you're showing it there. You know, there was an edict from FIFA not to have any political slogans.
So that means the Falklands are Argentinas, yes.
Correct. So obviously a massive political statement, massive... Yeah, that flag was paraded by the players.
I thought that was something you weren't allowed to do.
Kick them out.
We're in the World Cup final. Oh, but he won't do that.
Well, I just hope FIFA does something because it is absolutely scandalous and outrageous at that.
Spain is a wasted cause. We don't want to do any trade business with Spain. A terrible partner. They don't participate. They don't pay. They're hopeless. Bad people. I want no business with them.
Here in North America. And they traveled from Atlanta to Guadalajara to LA to Dallas and here to New Jersey. One final act on this incredible summer of soccer. For Rodri to lift the trophy and for the celebrations to begin both here and overseas.
I did.
Well, it went good, but I told them, I mean, you got to stop these fires from coming in and, you know, poisoning our air. Our air has been poisoned. I have a good relationship with Mark Carney, but, you know, we got to stop the fires up there. If we can help them, we'll help them. But maybe they should pay us some damages or something, or we should do some tariffs. But it was terrible. I mean, you had businesses closing.
There it is, the World Cup. It's just out there uniting the world, right? We see this over and again with, you should know when it's called the World Cup, that in fact it's going to divide the world. Any effort by human beings, human organizations to just bring the world together, to bring the nations together, really, you see, in this event, and listen, I like sports events like the next guy. In fact, as I drive through campus today, so much of our SEP experience for these young people, it revolves around sports. But sports in the world tomorrow, they're going to be very different than what you see at the World Cup or at the NBA Championship or whatever it is that this world produces. Here you have President Trump. He's in the booth with people he's insulted. He said about Spain they were bad people. And then you have Spain wins the World Cup, and he's out there wanting to photobomb the team. I think the FIFA guy was trying to get him off the stage, and he stayed there for the pictures. Can't make this up. And people can go on and on and on about how this is unifying the world. But the facts are the facts. They're stubborn things, as John Adams said. Look at the division it promotes. Look at the division it puts on display. It's really publicizing Satan's world. That's the truth. Certainly not God's world. What a difference. What a stark contrast between those two. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on the program today, this good Monday morning or Monday evening, wherever it is or whenever it is that you're listening to this show. You can get to the live stream at our website, thetrumpet.com, or at the Rumble channel, or at the YouTube channel. I mentioned this a few weeks ago. I think it was when the NBA championship was going on. Mr. Armstrong writing in the Youth magazine. Back in 1985, he was talking about how that he and his wife, early on in the work, they would go and attend a basketball game, one of the college teams in Oregon. He says here, the plain truth, well, further on, I'm just trying to skip ahead, sorry. And sure enough, in their senior year, these boys went on to win the first national championship, late winter in 1939. He says, at such games, you will see thousands being thrilled by scintillating play. Are these basketball fans enjoying life? If you ask them at the moment, the answer might be, you bet. Are they bored? Not during the excitement of the game. Do they feel a sort of mental, emotional, or spiritual hunger? Not during the thrill of the game. He says, but after the game, then what? Why, after the game is over and the fans have gone home, do they experience a letdown until the next game or the next experience or some pleasure? This is the way it's been. Even Mr. Armstrong enjoyed a good game from time to time. But then he talks about the letdown. And he said, you know, when my wife and I, when we would go home from these games, we didn't have a letdown because we had the work of God to do. And there's just built-in excitement and joy in doing God's work. And that's what we teach our young people here at this SEP camp, summer educational program. And as I say, so much of it revolves around sports, but playing sports the right way, playing sports with the right attitude, playing sports with good sportsmanship, encouraging one another, encouraging even the other team. Those are, as I said to the campers over the weekend, I'm not as involved this year as I've been maybe in years past, but one of the delights about SEP is just listening to the sounds of joy, the sounds of young people as they traverse the campus, as they participate in all the activities. It's a beautiful thing. Mr. Armstrong says, I got to wondering, after the game, I don't experience any letdown. I don't have to suffer the experience of emptiness, boredom, or this sort of soul hunger, whatever it is, until the next exciting entertainment. Why? He says, what's the difference? He says, I know what's the difference. I want to tell you what it is. The answer is bound up in the question I asked at the beginning of this article. I have learned what man is. He understood a thing or two about God's purpose and plan and why we're here on this earth. It's so fleeting. I was telling my wife, I don't know how old Messi is, but I guess he's the best soccer player ever. He's in his late 30s, I believe. Argentina doesn't win the game, and then you have this other team, this unbelievable team that's got, I think one, the announcer said at one point, there were two 19-year-olds on the field. 19 years old playing in the World Cup final. That's amazing. That's incredible. Not that Messi is bad. It's amazing he's still playing this good, this late in life, but life goes by fast, doesn't it? It's fleeting. The scriptures say it's just like a blade of grass. It's like a vapor that soon disappears. You know this. If you're my age and you begin to see other people from our generation that are dying off, you know how short our time is. And one day those 19-year-olds are going to be the old guys on the pitch. Mr. Armstrong went away from those events, those sporting events, invigorated. He had a nice little relaxing moment, and then he went right back into the work of God. We better focus on what's most important in life, or else we're going to find ourselves one day thinking, what is this about? Why didn't I do more with it? God has given us His truth. He's given us revelation. And so many of God's people, they don't care, or they deceive themselves into thinking they're doing everything just right. There's quite a few scriptures. I'll give you a few scriptures on the world, this present evil world, in just a second. But there's also a lot of scriptures about self-deception, about how easy it is to deceive yourself. It even says about the human heart in Jeremiah 17 that it's deceitful. It's desperately wicked. James said, if you don't do what you're hearing, you're deceiving yourself into thinking that, well, I agree with the message. I like what he's saying. I'm pretty good. The human heart likes to think it's good, even when it's doing things it knows are not good. This world, you look at the World Cup, and what do you see? You see the world. You see the world. And more, just like at the end of the game, they were on the pitch fighting each other, shoving each other, screaming at each other. And you see it up in the stands as well. You see it in the streets of Argentina. You see it between President Trump and Spain. President Trump and Canada. President Trump and FIFA. And then you have commentators rush to the microphone and say, isn't this wonderful? This event, the fact that the U.S. hosted this and it just brought the world together. Now everybody loves the United States. This was Secretary of State Marco Rubio following the game yesterday, clip four.
I'm very proud of America. I think America did a phenomenal job hosting the games. So did Canada and Mexico. And I hope a lot of people who got to come here and visit got to see aspects of our country that I think sometimes we take for granted. You know, things about our nation that are so special that sometimes I think those of us who have lived here our whole lives maybe forget or take for granted.
Well, that's true. We do take things for granted. I was told of one individual that went through the college here and now is back in Africa, and just how much of a struggle it is. Months long, just to find employment, just to find a job. We have been spoiled here in Manasseh. We have been prospering. We have experienced the most fabulous wealth, and visitors coming in from the World Cup or for that event, they've taken note of it. But does this make them love America more or despise America more? We're about to see. But when you go to other places on this earth, it's a struggle. And so much of the world is living in poverty, or they're malnourished, or they're fighting. There's filth, there's squalor. You can't just take one sporting event and say, now everything's better. Well, you can, but if you do, you're deceiving yourself. Listen to what Herbert Armstrong had to say. This was in a study he gave in 1980, clip 24.
The devil is now working in the children of disobedience. Those in the church were dead while they went that way, the way of the world. The devil has led the world in the way of get, the way of competition, the way of I love me, I don't love you. And the whole world is going that way, and it likes that way, and it wants to keep on going that way, and the world is in trouble, and it's in deep trouble.
But the world likes that way, and you see it in sports, don't you? Fighting, faking injuries, rolling around on the ground, getting sent off. That's just soccer. But that's the way, like we covered with the NBA championship. It's the same spirit. The spirit of competition. The spirit of crush the other guy. This world is in trouble. And even objectively analyzing sporting events can give you that message loud and clear. 1 John 5 and verse 19. It says the whole world lies in wickedness. The whole world. So I think this was the first year of the World Cup. They've been following the great tradition of the Super Bowl. They've got to have a halftime entertainment show. Like I said, it's the whole point is to put Satan's world on display. I didn't see it. I didn't see the halftime show. I didn't see most of the game. I saw the end. But it's there to promote this world. So obvious. Because that's what Satan is there to promote. His world, his way of life, his broadcast, his law. 2 Peter 1 and verse 4 talks about escaping the corruption that is in the world. 2 Corinthians 6 talks about coming out of this world. Revelation 18 says the same. Revelation 13 and verse 14 says that Satan deceives them that dwell on the earth. If you dwell on the earth, Satan deceives you. That's the scriptures right there. That's the Holy Bible. That's the inspired Word of God. That's not me. That's not my opinion. That's God's assessment. Revelation 20 and verse 3 says that the devil has deceived the nations of this world. Revelation 12, as you know, says that the whole world is deceived. And God is about to punish this world because of all of our sins. Listen to this clip from Don Lemon. He used to be on CNN, as you know, as he's talking about half the country, half of the United States. And as you hear this, ask yourself, is the world coming together? Is the world uniting around sports or any other movement? This is clip 9.
You think that once Donald Trump is gone, it's the end of MAGA? I don't know if it's the end of that sort of attitude. I mean, the MAGA is the closest thing to the modern version of the Nazi Party. This is America's version. It's the closest thing without the Holocaust and all that stuff. Because they're really not voting for the price of eggs. They're voting for white supremacy. They're voting for power. They're voting to have a preeminent voice. They've been co-opted by many people in the Republican Party and Donald Trump to think that their failures are due to something else, the other, the black person, the woman, the Latino, the immigrant, the migrant. That person is taking your job. That person is the reason that you don't have the financial or career success that you think that you should have. It's because of them. We want to take our country back. That's what MAGA is.
What are these people going to think when the actual Nazi party shows up? We talked last week about just the end of history. How ignorant is this kind of commentary? The end of history is here. The end of reading is here. These are dangerous times. And what we have, what is also here, you've got sports. You've got entertainment. You've got gadgets. You've got scrolling. You've got beauty. You've got youth. Mr. Armstrong wrote, this was back in 1985, God has called us out of the world. The world is kidnapped by Satan. Was kidnapped by Satan at the time of Adam's temptation. For 8 days we shall enjoy, well, he's talking about the Feast of Tabernacles observance, but he says here, it's Satan's world, but have we not, most of us, let so much Protestantism rub off on us that we just sort of take for granted that this is God's world, that this is God's civilization? So on the one hand, you have the celebration and the trophies and the confetti and the cheering. And then you have the mob violence. And then you have the public insults. And then you have the fighting and the division. Satan, he is a master at putting a kind of a shiny facade on top of all of this wickedness and corruption. He is a master at deceiving us into thinking that I think this world is pretty good. I think human nature is pretty good. I think I am a pretty good person. I think I can sit down with this person, even if the person says, I want to murder you, I think I can sit down and talk some sense into him. This is where we are. Don't let that kind of thinking rub off on you. It's not like this program is just looking at every sporting event and looking for all the best. We've played clips that are incredible. You know, they're these young people that can perform these feats on the field or in the court or wherever. We're not actively looking at every bad thing that comes out of a sporting event. But when you step back and look at the big picture, what is on display? It's certainly not SEP. It's not the spirit of our youth camp on this campus. Far from it. And then, what, as Mr. Armstrong said, the emptiness that people feel once they come off of the high, supposing their team actually wins the event. That's exciting. There's a thrill that comes with that. But then what? Then it's back to reality. The World Cup did not unite the world. Look at the competition, the strife, the division between the United States and Iran. Iran played in the World Cup, didn't they? I think it was a pretty good showing for their country. Did that bring the world together? Did that bring the United States and Iran together? You can play these next two together, clip 2 and 8.
Three American service members were killed in action over the past few days as the United States and Iran inch closer and closer to a return to all-out war. U.S. Central Command announced yesterday the death of an American soldier in northern Iraq who was killed during the disposal of a downed Iranian drone. Two U.S. soldiers were also killed on Friday in Jordan during an Iranian missile barrage, and one still remains missing. The latest fatality is raising the death toll of American military personnel in this Iran war to 17, while hundreds of other troops have been injured. The two sides, meanwhile, are continuing to exchange fire. The U.S. announced a new round of strikes overnight for the 9th consecutive night. As Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth says, the loss of U.S. soldiers, quote, only stiffens our resolve.
The peace deal, as Kevin Cork reported, the peace deal is off. It's hot again.
Yeah, absolutely. And it certainly appears that the tempo is picking up. And I think we're not going to see a return to what, you know, the previous weeks where the attacks would be paused to allow negotiation or talks to start. I don't think we're going to return to that. The bombing will continue and negotiations can pick up in parallel if they're going to be bear any fruit.
So, Victoria, we saw two oil tankers exploded today, hitting mines. Obviously, things are getting going in the wrong direction in terms of being going away from peace at the moment.
So much for the MOU, the memorandum, sorry, of understanding. Now we understand each other. Scarborough, even Scarborough said the MOU shows that Iran can't even be bribed. They can't even be bribed to stop the fighting. I hate to admit that Scarborough's right. All these perks, all of these sanctions lifted, all of these financial blessings, just the JCPOA 2.0, and even that didn't work. God is trying to get our attention. The Telegraph says here, the U.S. does not have enough missiles to return to an all-out war with Iran. That's the Telegraph. It's not like it's the Huffington Post. Donald Trump is considering his options to launch a wider war against Tehran as more American warplanes are deployed to the Middle East. However, a U.S. official familiar with administration discussions said the operation would be limited by dwindling stockpiles of air defense and long-range munitions. So when the Trump people come out and say, we're the best, we're the strongest, Iran has been demolished. Well, we lost three more soldiers over the weekend. U.S. did. And then when they talk about how powerful we are, you better think twice. Leviticus 26 says that our strength would be spent in vain. In other words, we use the strength, we spend the strength, but it's in vain, you see. Is that happening? It is happening. The war lingers on. I mean, we've talked about the diminished weapons supply of America on this program before. It's really pretty unbelievable to think about what one little nation in the Middle East, now they are the king of the South. We identified them as that in 1992. They are a menace. They are the number one state sponsor of terrorism. But how can they be a match for the United States of America? And we heard a message over the weekend about all the sea gates that God just gifted to Ephraim and Manasseh. And yet look at the power. This tells you something about the power that Ephraim and Manasseh once had. Look at what Iran can do by just putting a chokehold on the little Strait of Hormuz. And here we had everything. Ephraim, Suez, Gibraltar, Singapore, the U.S. had Panama. And we've just given them all away. And we do it proudly. When President Carter, when he signed the agreement over giving up Panama back in the late 70s, and then it happened 20 years later, he was just grinning ear to ear. Yeah, here you go. This is going to bring the world together. Just give it back. Give all of these powerful choke points that basically controls the flow of everything in the world. And Ephraim and Manasseh, the nations of Israel, we just gave it over to our enemies in some cases. And now we're seeing how important those choke points are. It identifies who we are in prophecy. Both the blessings, as I've said before, and the cursings. Here we've spent all of this military strength, and what do we have to show for it? In Iran, in the Middle East. This is Secretary Rubio again, commenting on Iran and the MOU, clip 5.
What?
The MOU dead, or are we just back at full scale?
Well, they're not complying with it.
I mean, the straits are supposed to be open, free of tolls, free of attack, free of all the things they're doing against these ships. So you can't have an MOU that's alive if they're violating the terms of it. What I will say is that the United States always remains open to a diplomatic solution. We've tried multiple times with Iran, and we'll continue to try. If that door opens, we'll be happy to see it open. But right, and they continue to send signals that they want to talk, that they want to negotiate, but their behavior is what we're responding to. And their behavior is they're launching missiles and drones against ships, including tonight.
They say one thing and do another. At least they're saying it now, the Trump administration. It used to be the MOU. This is eternal peace. We've finally received the wake-up call. There's an NBC News headline saying the Iran war cost could be as much as $100 billion. We're spending our strength in vain. We're running out of equipment. The cost, and we're broke. And we're $39 trillion in debt. And now we're spending another $100 billion over here. And as I say, what do we have to show for it? Lee Smith at Tablet. He asks, is Trump ready to win yet? You don't need to be a lawyer or a diplomat or even a high-end real estate investor to understand that if you are negotiating with another party for control of a property formerly under your control, you are formalizing that party's control of that property. He says the White House's Iran strategy looks out of sync, not because it's a sophisticated ploy to keep Tehran off guard. The U.S. is a superpower and doesn't have to devise some convoluted Levantine strategy to catch a mouse. The policy looks haphazard because the president has not decided to take back what has been under U.S. control for nearly a century. Trump has not decided, not yet anyway, on winning. It used to be America controlled these choke points. And now you see in the dialogue, you see in the actions, you see the attitude of a defeatist, of someone that just says, you know what, let them have it. And we'll fight to a certain point and then draw down. That has been the history since the end of World War. Look at what it took to win World War II. Look at what it took for the North to win the Civil War. To go all the way through to the end where the other side unconditionally surrenders. Is America or Britain for that matter? They've got a new prime minister who's out there saying, yeah, Margaret Thatcher is the problem. Margaret Thatcher. Do you think it looks good for Britain now? Now that they've got another prime minister? What is this, the eighth one in like 10, 12 years? It's not working. It's not working for our nations. It's not working for the world. And the world, as it happens, is arming itself for war. And you can look at a sporting event. The whole world was watching. And what do they see at the end of the match? Just fighting, division. They see worldliness. The premise of America's 80-year-old arrangement with the oil-producing Arab states in the Persian Gulf is the U.S. ensures safe passage of oil in return for tribute. The catch now is that Trump collapsed this pillar of American peace and prosperity by deciding to negotiate over control of the only maritime access point through which that oil, 20% of the world's supply, passes. We just gave it up. Just like we gave up Panama. I will say, at least President Trump understands, in some cases, the importance of Seagate. You see what he says about Greenland? He knows. Just look at the top of the globe, the North Pole, and see Russia, this and the Asian countries, these sprawling nations, and then North America on the other side. And, well, you can see where Greenland is It's very important strategically. So at least he has an awareness. He's not like Jimmy Carter. He's criticized Carter for giving up Panama. He says America should take it back. But we're just too weak. We're too weak to do it. We don't have the strength. And what strength we have, we're spending in vain. The pride in our power has been broken. This was Melanie Phillips in an interview with John Anderson, clip 10.
I've heard people say over and over again, no problem was ever solved by war. What do they think was going on between 1939 and 1945? It is so ridiculous, but they're so bamboozled by this doctrine that the worst thing in the world is dead people, and consequently we cannot cause dead people, we cannot cause people to die, even if it's a just war to stop innocent people dying, we can't do that. We must cut short altogether this option of war, and we must simply negotiate because everybody in the world is fundamentally open to appeals to their self-interest. You're dealing with religious, apocalyptic, messianic religious fanatics, and you're supposed to, they really believe that these people are open to appeals to their self-interest? They don't have them. They operate by a completely different set of values. And the West is so arrogant and so ignorant because of its arrogance that it never learns to approach other cultures on the basis on which they are operating. It insists instead on approaching them on the basis of the West.
We never learn. And she's there. I mean, she doesn't understand maybe that this is not God's world, but she certainly is a realist. She's not there fantasizing about peace breaking out all over the world. And she understands that when you're living in a world and you're surrounded by beasts, you better be willing to fight, to fight for victory, to fight for unconditional surrender. Like she said, how did the West win World War II? And of course, as Churchill understood, it could have been won a lot earlier and without near as many casualties if the West would have been willing to fight. To spend its strength, not in vain, but to crush Nazism. And yet, here comes Don Lemon talking about how the MAGA movement is the Nazi party. Okay. What a wake-up call we are about to receive. This is more from Melanie Phillips, clip 11.
People in Britain know virtually nothing that they should know. They have been given an account of what's happening in all these places, which is not only uninformed, but is propaganda by the enemy. And consequently, it's not surprising that they hate the people who should be Britain's allies and are essential, in fact, to Britain's long-term security. And they embrace the people who are its enemies. It's the political or cultural equivalent of autoimmune disease in which Britain and the West, or Europe, embrace the organisms that intend to kill them and try to destroy the organisms that are there to protect them.
We need to organize another interview with her. There's not too many commentators like her on Earth today. There just aren't. Here we are embracing the enemy. Listen to what she says about President Trump and when things got tough in Iran or with Iran. Listen to what she says about Trump's reaction. This is clip 22.
President Trump is approaching in November important elections. He didn't want the war to continue. Well, how did he cut his losses? He decided to declare victory. Well, that was absurd, because conventionally it was victory, but clearly it wasn't victory, because the Iranian regime continued to inflict major damage on American interests and on Western interests and on world interests. He declared victory, which is absurd, but then he proceeded to negotiate a deal. Well, clearly that's ridiculous. If it's victory, if they've surrendered, you don't need to do a deal.
She's exactly right. If you've claimed the victory, why do you need a deal? Here's one more from Melanie, clip 23.
The other great weakness that America has and the West has, which is this belief in negotiation and compromise. So it dangles, the regime dangles certain goodies that it knows America wants, and then the American negotiators say to President Trump, you know, just a little bit more and we can bring them on side, and Trump says, well, do your best. It's absurd. They never will give anything at all. It is all a ploy, it is all a ruse, based on their entirely correct, shrewd, and justified assessment of American weakness.
They know America's weak. They know America's spending its strength in vain. They know, in many ways, they know America's leadership is cursed. As strong as President Trump is in other areas, on this, it's not going well. What do you do when it looks pretty bad? Well, just declare victory. Just say the world is coming together. Just say we have eternal peace. Just talk about peace. Talk about love. Talk about unity. Talk about religion. Talk about the Bible. Talk about Jesus. The wake-up call is coming. You can see that the world is filled with wickedness and deceit. Are you a victim of self-deception? Or do you see this world the way God sees it? I mentioned at the start, driving through campus and seeing all these dorms out playing sports. And then you compare it to what's beyond the boundaries of this campus. It's two different worlds. That's what we're talking about. Two different worlds with two different laws, two different standards, two different gods. This is in Hebrews. Well, it's not just in Hebrews 2:5, but if you look into the Bible, the Bible talks about three different worlds. You've got the present evil world, that's Galatians 1 and verse 4. You've got the world that then was, that's 2 Peter 3 and verse 6. And if you go back to Genesis 6, you see how God describes the world that then was, before the flood, that is. He said it was filled with wickedness, with evil, with violence. So you've got the pre-flood world, you've got the present world described as evil in Galatians 1, and then you've got the world to come. Hebrews 2 and verse 5, look it up. The world that is coming, the wonderful world tomorrow. Revelation 11 and verse 15. Says, and the seventh angel sounded, and there were great voices in heaven saying, the kingdoms of this world are become the kingdoms of our Lord. That is coming. The kingdoms of this world are about to become the kingdoms of our Lord. He is going to reign as king over all the earth. You can read about that in Zechariah 14 as well. Jesus Christ coming back to this earth, and it says at the end of Revelation 11:15, we just read most of it there, that he'll reign forever and ever. And then what happens? Habakkuk 2 and verse 14. The earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Eternal as the waters cover the sea. The earth is going to be filled with God's truth, with God's knowledge. Now contrast that with Hosea 4 and verse 6, where it says, my people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. I read that to you last week. We don't have God's knowledge. We don't have God's truth. And so that's leading to our destruction. We've reached the post-truth era, the post-history era. You could say the post-Bible era. I think we reached that a long time ago. Truth fails. The truth is being buried, blotted out. It's being cast down to the ground. But there's coming a time when this earth, when all the programs that you turn on in the evening, when all the sporting events that you see on television, assuming some of them might be broadcasted in the world tomorrow, it's going to be so different. But what we will see in the world tomorrow is going to be a completely different world. Isaiah 11, verse 9, well-known verse, says they shall, this is describing the wonderful world tomorrow. It says, they shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord, as the waters cover the sea. Imagine an earth just absolutely flooded with God's truth, with God's way, with God's lifestyle, with God's law, with God's government, with God's family. That is a powerful, powerful opposite to everything that we're seeing today about this world, this present evil world. Can you begin to see why there are so many passages, hundreds of them, describing the world to come? Hebrews 2:5. Because that's where God wants us to set our minds. It's like I said last week, when you understand just how deceitful and wicked the human heart is, my father has written this in the Jeremiah booklet. He says, it should drive you to your knees for some intense prayer and Bible study. Because you see just how wicked, how evil this world is. But God wants us to also feast on a steady diet of the world to come. And to do that, we've got to dig into the scriptures. We've got to set our minds on the things above. Colossians 3:2. We've got to think deeply, ponder, stop and think about tomorrow's world. If you don't have a copy of that book, by the way, by Herbert Armstrong, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, make sure you go to our website, thetrumpet.com, and order your copy today. There's no cost, no obligation. Well, what do we have time left for? Why don't we, I mentioned just how different this camp is compared to what we see in the world today. And you get the same message. Essentially, when you go and view Celtic Throne, and I forget where those two are. We don't have time to play the 8-minute recap, but we'll finish today's show with a couple segments that have viewer feedback, those that attended those concerts. I forget where they are. I can't find it in my notes. But in any event, the comments, you won't be surprised by them if you've seen these before, but these are people reacting to the wonderful, uplifting, inspiring show that is Celtic Throne 2. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.
This has been an amazing show. I've loved it. I came here 2023 for the first Celtic Throne. Since then, amazing improvements. Love the cinematography, the storytelling, the singing. The instrumentals, all is a super high quality. and I love every moment of it. I can't wait to see everything that they do going forward from here.
I had a 3.5-hour drive, and I did not fall asleep on the way home. I was so wired from all the excitement, and I just love it.
My favorite part was the roar. I just like dramatic things. It's just super fun.
Everything was so cool.
It's just like
amazing.
A once-in-a-lifetime kind of thing.
It's awesome. Highly recommend. Great show. Makes Irish heritage proud.
Energy is phenomenal. It's just incredible. Really great. Fantastic.
Hiltic Women in Norfolk was even better than public radio, you know, public broadcasting. This is amazing. It's going to go far. It's going to be spectacular. I can't wait for everybody to find out about it.
It's more than amazing. I actually turned around and had a conversation with some of the ladies behind me because the ladies there were so excited. I was excited. They made me excited. Just everything. I was surprised at how much I could get on a stage. It's incredible. It's epic.
Absolutely incredible. I can't believe the quality of the dancing, the music.
The music was wonderful.
All the variety of it. Like, it was amazing. So thank you for having us out.
Wonderful mix. Yeah. It was fantastic all the way through. The athleticism was amazing. I was out of breath watching it.
The fight choreography was awesome. I've done some of that myself. And some of the spinning moves, like where you had to block on either side, that is incredibly tricky to pull off. And it was super well timed to the music.
The show was incredible. Everybody was so talented. And we enjoyed watching everybody just enjoying themselves on stage.
It was great.
A wonderful show. Absolutely. Made me tired just watching.
Fantastic.
It was wonderful. We had a great time, and my boys were into it the whole time. It was so much fun.
It was absolutely awesome.
It was amazing, and this is a really neat theater. We're all the way from Texas, but we were here on vacation, and we saw that y'all were here, so we came and had a wonderful time.
It was a wonderful show. It was really lively. The music was great. The dancers were great. The singers were great. It was just a really good, wholesome experience.
The professionalism of the show was remarkable. How in sync everybody was. Everybody was perfect on their marks. I really hope you come back next year.
Amazing.
Next time y'all are coming
guys.
Back, we're bringing our three little girls. And
we will
love
be
you
back.
So much.
High
y'all
fives.
Were phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal. But you brought so much joy to our lives. Truly. I was like in tears.
Hey. Oh, I think it's outrageously great. It's just everything about it, the technique, the music, the dancers, the kids.
Oh, we've loved it. We've absolutely loved it. I'm shocked how amazing.
It was amazing. The show was amazing.
We absolutely love it. Our kiddos got to dance from the Connick School of Irish Dance, and we are loving it. It's just as good, if not better, than Riverdance.
I danced for a couple seconds. Yeah, that was great. It was epic. We were watching it.
It's awesome. Very, very good stuff. So proud to see our daughters up there dancing from Connick School of Irish Dance, but the Celtic Throne. Amazing, amazing show so far.
Tell me what you thought of the show.
I thought it was great. It was much better than Riverdance. We went and saw it this past November. It was awesome. The audience interaction, the dancing, all of it was better. Much better. Loved it.
It was great. The crowd was really engaged and the songs were great.
It was phenomenal. I mean, it was history. It was art. It was Irish dance. It was bringing Ireland to the States. And North Carolina has such a heritage of Irish and Scottish background. Everyone should see this show.
Almost indescribable because there's so much strength and energy and emotion and love. It's just amazing.
I live in Melbourne, Florida, or Palm Bay, Florida. I'm up here taking my mom to the show for a late Mother's Day gift. And I just absolutely love Irish dancing. It's a fabulous show. Anybody that wants to see it ought to come. You'll get money's worth and you'll go away with a smile.
The show was amazing. The dancers were really good. The singers and musicians were really good. It was really fun.
The show is absolutely amazing, and we really enjoyed every bit of it.
Where's this gonna go?